Welcome to Business Matters on Eastern Sierra Now with me, Amy Smith. Today we are excited to welcome Karen Kong, an incumbent on the Bishop City Council who is running for re-election. Karen brings extensive experience in community service with her roles that include grant writer, prevention educator at Wild Iris Family Services, and program coordinator for the Inyo County Office of Education. Her work focuses on substance abuse prevention, suicide prevention, and the well-being of youth. Before we dive into Karen's vision for the future, don't forget to like and subscribe to our social media channels, especially YouTube, so you don't miss any of our shows during this election season. We're also offering special sponsorship opportunities for businesses. So if you're looking to advertise on the most watched local news and entertainment channel, now is the perfect time. Karen's platform emphasizes adapting city services to Bishop's changing demographics, supporting local businesses, and improving collaboration with Inyo County on critical issues like homelessness and health services. She is passionate about preserving Bishop's small town character while fostering growth. Let's give Karen a warm welcome.
Hi,
welcome.
Nice to see you.
It's great to see you again. Yeah. So how have you been?
Things are going good. Busy but good.
Good. Busy but good is a good thing.
Yeah, I like to be busy. So
I do as well. I love that. And when I'm not, I'm always wondering what can I do to become more busier.
Well, it's not even just about random busyness. For me, it's all about helping busyness. So
yeah. Oh, that's good. Good to hear. And I've got a lot of questions for you on that subject specifically. So if you are ready, is it okay if we jump in?
Ready when you are.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about your re-election to the Bishop City Council. Karen, what motivates you to seek re-election to the City Council? How does your vision for Bishop align with both the current challenges and future opportunity for the community?
So I think vision is an interesting word. When I ran in 2020, I really did it because I've spent my entire adult career helping people help themselves and really, really educating and trying to get people prepared to do the things that they need to do to improve their lives. And after all, I thought to myself, well, maybe I can do this in a bigger scope, that I can help with a lot of things that will help multiple families at one time. And so that was really the reason I ran. People used to say to me all the time, do you have, what's your platform? What's your real thought about, what's your point, the reason you're doing this? What are you mad about? And I would be like, I'm not mad about anything. Uh-huh. I just want to be part of the solution to the things in Bishop. And so it took a little while. I've always in my life, I'm a doer. Mm-hmm. And so some of the way that government works as an elected official is not quite boots on the ground as much as yes. I was prepared for.
Yes.
So it took me a little while to find my footing. Mm-hmm. And I just was thinking how incredible these 4 years have been and how we have as a city just hired the most remarkable people. Mm-hmm. We have a new fire chief who's just beyond amazing and uh-huh. professional, and is just rising the level of professionalism within our fire department. We have a new police chief who is a local, who just really wants to be here and is just jazzed and is mm-hmm. bringing everybody to the right place. We have a new public works director mm-hmm. I don't know how she handles all the things she handles. It's really quite amazing. And then we have a fiscal person, Ethan Aki, who mm-hmm. is also a local, wants to stay, young guy in his uh-huh. in his early 30s, who has done some really remarkable things with our finances and is finding ways for our money to make money. So I just looked at the team and I thought, I want to be a part of what these guys are doing. Mm-hmm. And so I'll run again.
Again, and if you could go back and give yourself advice 4 years ago from what you've learned, what would you tell yourself then?
I think I would tell myself to take a breath. That I jumped in and I was like, let's do this and let's do that and let's do this. Uh-huh. I had all these thoughts and ideas, and some of them have been accomplished and some of them have not. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to say, we at the city have a limited staff. And we have only as many people as we have. Uh-huh. And so things move at whatever pace they're going to move at. Mm-hmm. And that's regardless of how the money comes in or any of those other things that also move at the pace of government.
Yes.
So that's the first thing I would tell myself.
Understanding that pace.
Understanding
the pace. And accepting that pace,
right.
Maybe.
Uh-huh. And getting used to it. Uh-huh. And then the second thing would be to always be ready. Mm. That because of the pace, I imagine that some people just sort of sit back and wait for things to happen. And I'm just like always perched on the end of my seat being like, are you ready? Are you ready?
Are
you ready?
Do it now?
So that I can jump in and you know, offer suggestions and ideas and do things that I think are for the betterment of the city.
And that really lends into the experience that you had prior to becoming a city council member. You've supported families and youth through various roles, including your work with the Inyo County Office of Education. How have these experiences shaped your leadership style and prepared you for the challenges the Bishop faces today?
So, you know, I spent many years in Bishop, mm-hmm. Watching the city council, and for better or worse, the city council prior to maybe 10 years ago mm-hmm. was very reactionary. Something would happen, and then they would be like, "Oh, we need to do this." Mm-hmm. And in like 16 and 17 and 18, prior to my first run, mm-hmm. The council started to think in advance, and so. What I've done my whole career is prevention. And yes. So my thoughts are always in that mode. And
yes.
So when I saw that the council was starting to be prevention oriented,
yes.
How can we help this in advance before it actually comes? I thought this is the time for me to jump in.
A more proactive
absolutely.
A stance
the idea that as you do proactive work, as you do mm-hmm. prevention of things that are coming down the line, mm-hmm. you get a leg up on
yes.
what might happen.
And
I know we're going to probably talk about infrastructure later, and
we
that's
will,
a
for
great
sure.
example
yeah.
of some of the things that we're working on now.
Yeah, well, and why don't we talk a little bit about affordable housing, because that's something that we're looking forward to in the future as well. Affordable housing remains a pressing issue as Bishop's population changes. How do you plan to meet these housing needs while preserving Bishop's small town character? Are there any specific initiatives, such as collaborations with DWP, that you believe can really make a difference?
So it's interesting. I like to say that it's all housing that we need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, if you're a young family starting out, there are no houses to buy. If you are a single coming in, there you're probably stuck living in a shared rental,
uh-huh.
like you thought you weren't going to have to once you got out of college.
Sure.
And so all along the different stages of people's lives, we need all of those housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a matter of trying to capture what it is that we need
mm-hmm.
and bring in the folks that can help with that without wagging our finger at them and telling them what they have to do.
Certainly.
And so we have been really trying hard as a city especially in the last year, to do a couple of different things. Zoning, for example.
Yes.
So there is a new apartment complex that's going to be built behind the bowling alley.
I've heard of this.
And so we did some variances and some other mm-hmm. things that would require a little smaller of a setback for them
uh-huh.
from the street that made it possible for them to build the number they wanted to build.
And there was something about parking with that structure as well, wasn't there?
Correct. So uh-huh. there is some parking issues there that the Planning Commission and the city looked at to make mm-hmm. it so that, because when you're a developer, right, you put mm-hmm. things on paper and they have to pencil out so
you
that
have
they
to have
work.
So many spots
correct.
Per residence and per bedroom.
Well, not even the parking issue, but just mm-hmm. as a builder of things,
yes.
you need to make sure that what you build is going to make sense on paper so that you can make money, right? And you can, that you, your building costs are not higher than what you're going to be able to make.
Sure.
And so the parking variance and the setback variance that happened for that complex that's going to be built behind the bowling alley happened so that he could pencil out the project.
Wonderful.
Right? Because we don't want to be, as a city, we don't want to obstruct people from from building. We want mm-hmm. to make it as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. And to that end, we're also doing a lot of reaching out to builders mm-hmm. all over the state. People who are, you know, they have lots of irons in the fire at one time. Mm-hmm. To get them to think, you will never not have a full complex, whether it's a duplex or a apartment yes. or a single family house. You will never mm-hmm. be sitting with nobody filling it.
Oh, sure. There's definitely more renters than there are structures or more buyers than
absolutely.
There are structures.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
What a better investment opportunity.
Right. And I don't think people think of us in that way, you know,
sure.
often, especially in big cities. They just think of us as kind of a pass-through place.
Well, sometimes you look at Bishop and you see all the land around Bishop, but that isn't something that we really have access to as far as building new structures is concerned.
Right. So as far as the DWP land is concerned, mm-hmm. I think in the past, people have used that as an excuse.
I see.
Right? Uh-huh. DWP's got all the land, there's nothing we can do about it. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's true. The city itself owns different little pieces of property.
Oh.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so a couple years ago, probably 2 years ago, I directed the city manager to say, look, why don't we, instead of complaining that we can't make headway with DWP mm-hmm. or you know, beating our head, feel like we've beaten our head against the wall because the process is so slow, why don't we look at what we have property-wise and see where we can move things and do mm-hmm. things and then sell that property to people mm-hmm. to build housing. It's really quite interesting. So There's a apartment complex that's been talked about for probably 6 years prior to 2020 when I ran. Mm-hmm. It's called Silver Peaks, mm-hmm. and eventually we were able to purchase the land from DWP, but it took 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, yes. an exorbitant amount of time.
Well, and I work with DWP as a solar contractor, and though the process is very, very slow with them, because like many of our business owners, I believe they're overstaffed. There could be other issues involved, but it is a very slow process.
Well, and you know, I think that our local people really want to work with us. You know, we have some great relationships with mm-hmm. With Adam Perez and mm-hmm. the locals here.
Yeah.
And sometimes the pushback comes from LA in general.
My experience with DWP local engineers is fantastic. I have their cell phone numbers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's not necessarily that local representation. I want to be clear of that because they're our neighbors and our friends as well.
And not just that, but I know they understand what we need.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that they're not trying to stop that. They want to, that's why they continue to meet with us and mm-hmm. continue to talk about what all the options are uh-huh. because of the fact that they want people, their employees can't find places to live either.
And that's a lot of the reason for some of the holdups that we face when we were working here on a local level.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so, you know, my hope is we can get, so we have right now the place behind the bowling alley is going to be built. Mm-hmm. There's a place on East Lyon Street. It's going to be 8 apartments that they're just finishing the demolition on.
Uh-huh.
At some point, Silver Peaks, back behind Pizza Factory in that area, by next mm-hmm. to Vaughn's, will mm-hmm. be built. Mm-hmm. And they will be all different levels of housing.
Great.
The one thing we haven't been able to accomplish yet is finding some land to build actual houses on, right?
Yes. So these will be multifamily dwellings?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, they'll mm-hmm. all be multifamily dwellings mm-hmm. at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the other thing that more opportunity will bring is the idea that rental prices have just escalated, you know, exponentially in the last 6 months, let alone the last year.
Absolutely.
And the more availability there is, those rest of those will start to go down as well.
And see some competition within the rental market. So
Correct.
Instead of just going and looking at one place or waiting for one place to become available, you can go visit 3 and see as a renter where you'd like to live.
And you know, some of our rentals within the city are not the best.
Yeah.
They haven't been upkept maybe to a level in which you a single female or a female with children would feel necessarily safe living. And so the hope is that as we get these places built, you know, everything will rise because of that, except for the cost.
Is there any estimate on how soon a family could move into any of these units?
No, you know, that is often the issue, right? With construction costs being what they are and timelines. Mm-hmm. I do know that the place on, like I said, the place on East Line has just finished turning in their plans and they're in that place. And so as soon as those get approved, they'll start the actual building process as opposed to the demolition, which is what they've been doing.
Understood. So. Thank you for that, because I'm always curious, and I hear those questions as well from our viewers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing I was talking about when you talk about staffing and being sort of the overseer. That sounds terrible, but the person who oversees the staff is that I have a whole list of things, and every time I go in, I'm like, where are we on this one, and where are we on this one, and where are we on this one?
Yes.
Not to nag them, but just so that I can keep track of it and answer the questions from the constituents when they come.
Well, and education is key, and I think it really puts people's minds at ease when they know the information and when those questions are answered.
So absolutely.
I appreciate all the information on that, and I'm excited for all of the projects that are moving forward.
It's really exciting, and not to be a tease, but there are a couple other that are in the works that'll be really exciting when they happen.
Well, when you're allowed to talk to them about them, come back and talk to us.
Okay,
perfect. Let's move on to fiscal responsibility. It's a priority for you. If reelected, how will you ensure Bishop maintains a balanced budget while preserving essential services? Are there any specific areas where you see opportunities for cost saving without negatively impacting residents or raising taxes?
You know, the citizens of Bishop raised taxes on themselves back in 2019, right before I ran. Mm-hmm. The sales tax went up, and so
they did that by a vote.
Mm-hmm. That's the only way it can happen. Mm-hmm. So it went on the ballot, and they voted for it, and so that's really helped our bottom line.
That's great.
As you all know, you know, Bishop is the center of all sort of sales in Inyo County, with the exception of Death Valley. And so, you know, even the tourists, as they come through and buy things, that all that sales tax comes into our coffers, which is really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting to me about the fiscal landscape is that some of the things that are everyday things are perfectly, we can spend our money on them, and they work great. Mm-hmm. And then there are the big ticket items that are just seem so out of proportion to what we have in our coffers.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we did 2 or 3 years ago was that we instructed all of the staff to, through the city manager, we instructed all the staff to start a capital improvement fund. That we wanted to see in the budget every year that people are putting money aside for capital improvements.
Could that be used for emergency situations as well?
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
And so, because up until that point, there hadn't been any money set aside for that. That it was just like, oh, shoot, here we are, and we need to get this done.
And you know, helping young families and helping people as you have, even if you have a little bit of money back, you know, for a car repair, or if, you know, something happens with your job, just a little bit of money can really save you from a lot of problems.
Right. And when we're talking about these big ticket items like sewers and water pipes and fire engines, you know, the ones in the millions of the dollars, we need to set that money aside so that it's continuing to grow and growing money on its own, and that every year they put money into this capital fund.
And that's part of your balanced budget today.
Right. And it is a balanced budget. I mean,
that's something to be very proud of.
Yeah. You know, again, Ethan is just fabulous, and all of our department heads really work hard to not reduce services for people and not raise prices for people and still provide everything that we provide. Mm-hmm. If you were to go build something, for example, in another city, the kind of costs that are associated with that versus the things that we have in place is it's just night and day. Yeah. We'll talk to builders and they'll say things, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? And we're like, yeah, there's no fee to this.
Well, and I, being in the contracting world, I work with permitting in all kinds of towns and counties and things like that. I will say Bishop is, it's the easiest to work with them. You can talk to someone on the phone. You can run and pick. I mean, I've always appreciated that.
Well, and you know, we, as Bishop continues to expand, those are areas in which we need to talk about expanding. Right now, we share our two building inspectors, James and Tyson, we share with the county.
Yes, yeah.
Their employee shares, and they're actually technically the county employees. You know, we've been talking behind closed doors about the idea of, you know, when are we going to be at a point where we need our own, where we don't have to share them with all the other, you know, with Olancha and all the other things that are happening in all the other parts of the county.
Inyo County is enormous. So, and I know when, because I've worked with James and Tyson before, wherever we are, there they are. I'm like, my goodness, just their drive time alone to get to different locations.
And the waiting that that makes for the people who are trying to build within the city limits. You know, that can be the most frustrating piece of all of this. And so, so those sorts of things, how can we make services for the citizens easier while still not, you know, blowing the budget up?
Absolutely. That's a that's a difficult balance
sometimes. So one of the things
with a growing city as well.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we're looking at is that, for example, is that our park is always busy, 24/7, all the time. The crazy winter a few years ago, all of the Mammoth sports were coming down, and we we were trying to shuffle. And I say we, Dan McElroy, fabulous manager, was trying to shuffle the Mammoth people in between our little league and our AOSO and and all of that. And so we're going to look this year. Several years ago, I can't even tell you how many, maybe eight. Or so, we wrote a park master plan. And I say we, the city wrote one. I wasn't around then. And so we're going to, this year, we're going to have some public meetings and relook at what that park master plan looks like. Does it still serve our needs? Does it? Are there new funding streams that we can help to build these things? Just last week, the county approved money in their budget to help us refurbish one of our, build on the back of the park to build another field there. And so, you know, we're always looking for ways that we can continue to improve services because you know as well as I do, that park is for everyone in the county, not just for city residents.
Well, and I have spent a lot of time in those parks. I have kids and for various sports over various years have been there and they're so nice and the sidewalks are nice, but there are a lot of kids here and as Bishop grows, our kid population will as well.
Right, so, and you know, we're the hub of that. And so
really
that's
are.
Why we reached out to the county and said, look, these are not just our city, you know, two square miles city of Bishop kids. These are everybody's kids.
Does Bishop, does Mammoth contribute to that when they're coming down for their sports?
Usually.
Or is that, they do? That's good to know.
Good. It just depends. You know, if it's just a one-time thing or with the winter being what it is.
That
you know,
was
We really, really try to make it as accessible to everyone and not have it be a... have money be a detriment, you know?
Yeah, and that's beneficial. I remember in Mammoth shoveling the soccer field to try to have a Mammoth match. So it's beautiful that Bishop is so, I mean, it's you're really actually pretty close, but the difference in elevation and the weather, it's phenomenal for year-round sports here, so.
Yeah, and so, you know, those are sort of the balancing acts you have to do with the budget.
Yeah, and being so rural as we are.
If you look at, I'm just going to keep talking. If you look at,
I'll interrupt you for a minute for a commercial break.
Okay.
But let's, do you want to,
we can do that now and then come back to it. That's fine.
Let's come back to that because there's some other questions I want to talk with you. I want to review with you as well. So give us a minute. We will be right back with Karen Kong and we'll continue that thought. Thank you. Welcome back. We are going to pick up where we left off before the break. And the last thing that I mentioned was shoveling soccer fields. And that brought something to your
mind. Well, and so I was saying that it's a forever balancing act between being fiscally responsible and providing the services. So Park and Rec is just the easiest example of that. We offer a gymnastics program that within less than 24 hours is already full. You know, we have an after-school program which has a waiting list. We, you know, everything that we do is chock full to the brim. And so how do we figure out a way to offer more of that without breaking the bank? How do we offer more without with making it accessible for people who may not have the funds? You know, we don't want to raise costs exponentially just to offer more and price people out of the market. So there's just all that sort of balancing that needs to take place.
Well, and I always think about it as parent power. I think that children should have equal opportunity regardless of who their parents are or what means their parents have. Absolutely. So I think offering a program to everybody regardless of cost, especially when you're talking about children, that's so valuable.
Yeah.
That really hits home for me.
Well, and I just think that, you know, the fact that our gymnastics class is full before 24 hours is up of an opening
means
that there's a demand. So how do we find enough instructors and how do we, you know, use that one room we have most efficiently? And it's just a lot of different pieces. You would be amazed at what our small staff in the city manages to get done with, you know, just the numbers they have.
Well, and everybody in a small town wears several hats. We've got several jobs. We've got several irons in the fire.
Absolutely.
So we're all running between those because there's not a lot of people here. Right. So we have to pull from the strengths that we have. And let's talk a little bit about the future. What do you see as the biggest challenge Bishop will face in the next 5 years? And how do you plan to address this? And how will your relationship with state and local agencies help to advance not only the kids, but the city's needs?
Sure. You know, first, the very first thing that pops into my head, besides housing, because we already talked about that,
would be
emergency services. You know, we had the wonderful Judd Simons retired, closed his business, and he'd been our ambulance company for, you know, gazillions of years in the city of Bishop. And sadly, with his retirement, it just opened up this, I'm going to use the word chasm, it opened up this big issue, and no one quite knew how to figure it out.
And what was the issue? Was it that the service wasn't available or that there was competing needs for the service?
So Judd had always been the only ambulance company in your county, really, for the volunteer. So Big Pine has an ambulance, and Owens Valley has an ambulance, and Lone Pine has an ambulance.
Okay.
And I think Olancha has an ambulance as well. Mm-hmm. But for the city of Bishop and the, you know, greater Bishop area, it had always just been Simons.
Okay.
And when he closed his business, it is by state regulation the county's responsibility to fill that spot. Okay, they need to reach out and provide, find someone, or provide it themselves. It was one of those things that between county admin and board of supervisors and us over at the city limits, we had a different speed in which we wanted this to go, right? We were like, holy moly, we're going to have no ambulance in you know, 30 days.
Well,
what are we going to do?
And that is such a critical need.
Oh,
so there's, you have to have that filled within that amount of time.
And the county was just like, oh, we'll figure it out. And we were like, no.
We need to figure it out now.
Yes, we were a little more anxious about it, I think.
Yeah.
Not that the county doesn't do a great job, but just that some of us were kind of like, oh, we need to make sure our people have what they need.
Yeah, prioritize this is something we're going to focus on.
And then the second problem, and it's a universal problem across the state, the amount of money that ambulance companies get back from Medi-Cal and Medicaid is minuscule in comparison to the amount of money they're spending. And so how do you help an ambulance company survive in a town like ours where there are not many people who want to come and do the ambulance
and
service?
And you've got great distances here to cover as well. So it's
correct.
Not as if you're just in the small city limits. Inyo County is very large. So so covering those costs, you've got EMTs, you've got certified personnel in the ambulance, just the payroll alone for that staff. I couldn't imagine what the cost would be.
Yeah, I don't, luckily that's not a city function.
So,
so right now the county has contracted with Sierra Lifelight, REACH. I don't know which name people know them by. And all of the entities that are involved are paying a subsidy to keep them afloat.
Okay.
So we've paid, the tribe has paid, and the county has paid. That is not a model that can continue. And how do we solve this problem? Because we, like you said, there are people who need, there are people who call the ambulance just to help them if they've fallen on the ground, right? Because they don't have anyone in their homes. Well, and so they call, and the ambulance comes, and they pick them up, and they put them back in bed, and then they leave. Yeah. Is that a billable thing? No.
Oh, my.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we exist, I think, in Inyo County in a way that other people don't. I'm not sure if you were in, suburban Burbank, if the ambulance company would come and do that for you. I don't know. Maybe they would. And so how do we get it so that it is sustainable? One of the ways they do that is a thing called an exclusive operating area. What that means is the county will put out a contract for this exclusive operating area. It goes to this fancy thing called ISMA. Don't ask me what it stands for.
I was going to, but now I won't.
And what it says is no other ambulance company can sneak in here and take business.
Okay.
It gives them exclusive right to do all of the ambulance stuff. That really helps. Right. So I know the county is working on that. Okay. The city we have been looking into the idea that for some strange reason, if a city is in charge of the ambulance company, the payback for Medi-Cal and Medicaid is higher than
that's
it is
interesting.
In a private entity.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why that is.
Okay.
And so we actually have a consultant out there now working to find out if we took the exclusive operating area as a city and then contracted out to whoever wants to apply, would then the money coming in from the state, the not just the private insurances, but the Medi-Cal and Medicaid, would that not be better and maybe take up the difference between what we're paying in subsidies right now?
I see.
We don't know the answer to that yet. The report hasn't come, but we're hoping that it makes it a model that is that is more workable for everybody. If the report come back and says, no, it's not going to work in this situation, or if, for example, an ambulance company maybe doesn't want to work under that model, it's called an alliance model, then what's the next step?
And I appreciate you sharing all this with me. I had absolutely no idea the structure of that company, how it worked with our communities, and just what a valuable resource it is. You just think it's always going to be there.
That's exactly right. And we, when this first started a year or so ago, a year and a half maybe at this point, that's what we wanted. I think that's the, in a perfect world, that's the way government should work.
Yes.
It should be doing, it should be like hamster wheeling its feet behind the scenes so that nobody in the city notices any disruption in anything.
Yeah.
The police should always be coming, and the fire should always be coming, and the ambulance should always be coming, and whatever it takes to make those things happen, we should be doing.
And people don't think about that.
Yeah.
And if things do run well, no one will notice.
Exactly.
And that's
you can't prove the goal. Negative, right?
Right. Yes, that's absolutely the goal. Karen, I want to switch gears here for a second. I want to talk a little bit about your career. Your career has focused on supporting families and youth from substance abuse prevention to social emotional education. How has this work influenced the policies that you advocate for on city council?
So I really try hard, I'll just say. I try to keep my hats as separate as possible.
I see.
I think that sometimes I know more than I want to know. You know, that if I was just a regular government official, I might not know these little secret pieces over here. But in an overall way, what I find working with families is and children and teens is that I'm going to curse here. They have a pretty good BS Right?
They do. I have two teenagers, so right. I know that
they
inside
know
and
when
out.
You're not being genuine with them. They just know when you're giving them a line or you're, you know, spinning wheels trying to stop something.
That is
my number one goal in life is to always be authentic and always be me and be as crazy transparent as possible so that people know that I am who I am and I'm genuine. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has been my biggest influence in all of my jobs is it's something you have to learn. It doesn't come easy to me. Mm-hmm. And I know it doesn't come easy to other people who try to do it, but that is what I bring to every policy decision is that I talk to people and I think of the 2 square miles and the greater Bishop area. And I try to figure out which decision is going to help the more people than not.
Well, and I think it's important in any government policy that you understand the ripple effect of decisions and policies and things that you're going to implement. And when you get down to the family level, I mean, I don't think you can understand that ripple effect any more than working closely with families and seeing how those decisions impact families, children, the school, all of those things. I think that's really valuable.
Well, and for me, the idea that, you know, the thing about working with families is that, you know, you realize right off the bat, you're never going to make everybody happy.
No, no.
And your job is to do the best you can to improve whatever it is that you can improve within that family structure or individual structure for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so that piece of this is much easier for me than it might be for other people because I'm prepared to weigh the options and pick the one that is the best for everyone without you know hoping that I'm not going to make it knowing I'm not going to make everyone happy.
And it's okay sometimes if everybody's not happy as long as it's all for the greater good, I feel. And hopefully they can learn to see that and to understand the greater good aspect of government.
Well, and I think the other thing that is often hard for people to understand about government in general is that, especially at the city level, is that a lot of the things that have to happen aren't our rules.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. They come from the feds or they come from the state, or, you know, and we can only do what we can do with them.
Yeah.
We can, you know, we can't go and say, oh, let's not follow that rule. That doesn't fit our city, so let's not follow it. We can advocate and fight up the chain, but when push comes to shove, the rules are the rules, right? And so how do you work within those parameters that are set for you, even if you don't like them, to make the best decisions?
Yeah. And that leads me into, you've been actively involved in the community and initiatives, especially those supporting families and youth. How has this involvement shaped your vision for Bishop's future? What new opportunities do you see for fostering greater inclusion and representation?
You know, sadly, from my work, you know, we look at infrastructure and we look at housing and we look at businesses and empty storefronts. All of those things are super important, obviously. But the one thing that we don't look at is the idea of we have issues that regular big cities have, right?
Yeah.
We have people who don't have homes. Last year, there were 73 kids in the Bishop schools who were homeless.
Oh, my.
In one form or another, that means living in motels or living in their cars or whatever.
With all the pressures of school and growing up in the worlds of the kids live in today, I couldn't imagine that being something that they'd have to consider as well. That's heartbreaking.
You know, you look at our homeless population. Are they homeless? You know, a lot of people will say they're homeless by choice, and maybe they are, but they probably also have a mental health issue or an addiction issue that is untreated, you know. Those issues from the big city come in and have to be factored in choices and decisions. How do you balance the rights of homeless to exist versus the rights of business owners to not have them standing in front of the businesses, right?
Yes. Public space management.
Right. Right. Exactly. How do you balance the need for things like after school programs with, again, the financial ability or the space issue or the staff issue to pay for it? I think that when we look towards the future of Bishop, some of those things are going to have to be really looked at.
Yeah.
How do we figure this out so that we can do better? Bishop is such a fabulous place.
I agree.
It seems to me that we should be able to figure out a way to do better than the poor big cities are on these issues.
Yeah, but they are big problems. And we're a small city and they are big issues and big problems.
Right.
So talking about homelessness, do you think that there needs to be a better collaboration between Bishop and Inyo County on issues like that and health services? And if you do, what specific steps would you take to enhance that cooperation?
Well, it would be super easy for me to stand in my city hat and say, you know, the county's not doing their job. It's not the case. The county, we as the city have no Health and Human Services Department. We have no services in those ways to help with this. And so the county's doing all that the county can do. How it impacts our law enforcement and our businesses is a different ballgame. So so one of the benefits to my being on city council is the idea that I already have those relationships built through all of my other dealings. And so when there is an issue between a business and a homeless person, or when there is someone who is doing things in the parks that they shouldn't be doing as far as drugs and alcohol, those relationships that I've already built between the city, between myself and the HHS staff, really can help.
That's great. Is there a homeless location in Bishop? Is there a place that people that have mental health issues can go today if they're having a crisis?
So we have, the county has, and it has a fancy name, I don't know what it is, but basically it's a sort of on-call mental health facility.
Okay.
And so at any point when our police department runs into someone who's having a mental health issue, they have someone they can directly call, whether that's 11 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, so there's somebody there to talk to you if you are having a mental health issue.
Correct, and there is someone who actually, from the county, who actually will come out wherever this is taking place.
Okay, I was curious about that.
To help with that. Because, unless this person has committed a crime, there's not really much the police department can do, but our police are often the first interaction, right? And then, and so that they have someone now they can call to come in and deal with those things is really great.
I think it is. I think having a mental health professional there instead of going right to the police is really important. And hopefully they can get help and they can find help through that access. Karen, you're sharing so much fascinating information with me. I really appreciate your time. I'd like to ask you just one or two more questions. Can you stick around?
Absolutely.
Okay, we will be right back with one or two more questions for Karen when we return. Thank you.
Once upon a time, the world relied heavily on fossil fuels to power its cities and cars. Corporations controlled these fuels and sold them at high costs. Though these fuels were powerful, they were polluting the air, making the skies gray and the rivers murky. People worried about the Earth and their future. Then, one day, a group of wise and powerful wizards gathered from all corners of the globe. They worked together to harness the power of the sun, capturing its radiant energy in magical crystals. These wizards bestowed these sun crystals to the people, teaching them how to use the sun's endless light to power their homes and vehicles. As the people embraced this bright new gift, rooftops sparkled with the wizards' magical crystals, and cars began to hum gently, driven by sunlight. The skies cleared, the rivers sparkled, and the air became fresh again. The world thrived under the warm glow of the sun, and everyone lived happily ever after because, as the good wizard showed them, the power to change the world was within each of our grasp the whole time. Here's to a happy and green ever after, from your friends at High Point Solar and Electric.
Okay, welcome back to Eastern Sierra Now. We are here with Karen Kong. And Karen, thank you for sticking around.
Yeah, anytime.
I appreciate that. And also come back and talk to us as these initiatives get passed, as more information comes along. Our viewers would love to listen.
Assuming I get reelected.
Yes, assuming that, well, even if you don't get reelected, I'm sure there's lots of reasons we'd like you to come back and talk with us. Let's think about looking back on your time as a city council member. What accomplishments are you most proud of? How do these achievements reflect the direction that you want to take Bishop in the future, particularly in terms of economic growth and addressing vacant storefronts?
So, you know, the vacant storefront issue is, it's one of those issues that is incredibly frustrating because of the fact that as a city, we virtually have no control over it.
Those are usually privately owned
They're all privately owned structures. When the new motel came and that's going to be built next to the downtown Vons came, people were like, why is the city building a hotel instead of a, you know, a TJ Maxx? And,
sure.
And the answer is, that's not within our power to do. We really try hard, as far as empty storefronts, to encourage the business owners to do their best to find someone in there. I will say, sadly, that there are some owners of downtown vacant buildings who have chosen just to let them be vacant, who have been offered cash to purchase them, who have been offered different ideas as to how to fill them, who just say, nah, it's just too much work.
Wow.
And so we are looking at, it's one of the things, it was my little pet project, I think, the idea that in the state, there's starting to be a movement to have some sort of, I don't want to use the word consequence, but it's the best one I can think of, for people who choose to leave their buildings vacant. For a city our size especially, it is completely unhelpful in every single way.
Because
for a business, for an empty storefront to be there when there are people who want places to be. And so we're looking into different policies we can pass that might incentivize them to not leave their buildings vacant.
I see. And then going back to the first part of the question, what accomplishments are you most proud of in your role on the city council today?
So I think I'm going to address one of my most controversial things. So January of last year, the Bishop City Council considered the idea of removing an opening prayer from our meetings, with the idea that as much as it is a tradition within the City of Limits, it is also can be off-putting for people who do not believe or who believe in a different religion than the one that is that is praying.
And saying that was controversial, what was your stance on the beginning prayer?
So my stance is that it shouldn't, that mixture between government and prayer shouldn't be, and that if we're going to do something, then it would really have to be all inclusive.
Yes.
And it is a much better option just to not have it. But one of the things that I did in that time period was because we had lots of people coming in and being very upset about the idea of removal of the prayer. And one of the things that I did that I was, that when you talk about most proud of, was I gathered together a group of about a dozen or so people, locals, who wanted the prayer to continue, and a dozen or so people who wanted the prayer removed, and we held meetings in which we tried to come to some consensus on what would be acceptable to both of them, and we met two or three times and had some really good discussions. Really tried hard to, the people in the room really tried hard to understand one another, and I tried hard to facilitate some sort of plan. Mm-hmm. What we ended up coming up with was the moment of silence that is actually taking place now.
I was going to ask, so there was a consensus. So within that moment of silence, you can pray, you can not pray, you can regroup.
Right.
I think that's a beautiful decision. How did it work out for everybody?
Well, I will say, as mm-hmm. as we already mentioned, that some of the people after the agreement was made decided they didn't like the agreement.
Oh.
And were unhappy about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. But it still, I know, mm-hmm. whether they did or not, I knew that my intentions were as pure as they could be to see if we could get these two groups together, because there are lots and lots of things within the city that need to be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I won't say fixed, but done, right? And if we have such a divisive group, you know, two people who will not agree with one another, the more we can bring them together in a room to talk about those issues, the better it is. And and this was just my attempt to begin that.
And to begin that on a level, some people might think that's the biggest issue. Some people may think it's a more minor issue. But if you can come together on an issue,
right,
I think that's a great start for the rest of the
Well,
rest of the
day. And it was an issue that everybody had strong feelings about.
I bet.
And so it seemed to me it was the perfect time to start those discussions.
Yeah.
It also, for the most part, brought in people who maybe didn't live in the city limits. There was lots of people who had strong feelings about it who weren't actually 2 square mile city limit people. And I think that's super important, that when we're making decisions for the major business area in the entire county, we need to listen to people who live in Round Valley and in Wilkerson and all those sorts of places.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate you sharing that with me. It has been fascinating talking to you, as always. Please come back and see us, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck in your campaign.
Thanks. All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. That wraps up today's episode of Business Matters on Eastern Sierra Now. A big thank you to Karen Kong for sharing her vision for Bishop's future as she runs for re-election to the City Council. If you haven't already, be sure to like and subscribe to our social media channels to stay updated on all our episodes, especially during this exciting political season. And remember, we're currently offering special sponsorship opportunities for businesses looking to get more involved with the most watched local news and entertainment channel. And a reminder, stay mindful, stay connected, and take time to enjoy our beautiful Eastern Sierra.